is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And I am so excited because I am talking to Scott Onetto, and I just don't usually get a chance to talk to Scott. He's so busy with his research projects. He has so much that he's doing. And I should mention, he's the farm advisor for the Central Sierra, which is El Dorado, Amador, Calaveras, and Tuolumne counties. So Scott, hello.
Hi, Debbie. Great to be with you today. Thank you so much for having me on the radio program.
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to talk about a weed problem today. And I have to admit, I did not realize it was actually a problem, but it truly is. And that is something called oblong spurge.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to talk about oblong spurge today. Also, some people may know it as egg leaf spurge or Balkan spurge, or by its scientific name, Euphorbia oblongata. But yeah, it's definitely a huge pest problem here locally that it's great to be here today to talk about it and make people more aware of just why it's so bad and why we need to focus on it.
Now, I'm wondering if you can give a description about it, because I believe on one of the trainings you did for a Master Gardener training class last year, and it was on weed management, I believe you were in front of a picture of a beautiful, beautiful field, and it was just this gorgeous yellow. And was that it?
It's... You know, if you're driving through the foothills, you know, typically right along the Highway 49 corridor, especially if everybody's familiar with the McCallum River where 49 goes over, or even Highway 26 where it passes down through West Point up into over the McCallum River in usually mid to late summer, June, July, August, you'll often see just this beautiful yellow display. Often covering the hillsides and the roadways. And in many cases, this is the pest of the topic today. This is often oblong spurge.
So that's got to be, I mean, because it is so pretty, I think people probably, and myself included, thought it was a native plant.
Yeah, it often is misidentified or misunderstood as a native plant. It's an introduced weed from the Balkan region. That was basically that's around Turkey and sort of the Southeast Europe area. It was brought to the Americas with so many other, you know, ornamental plants back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So it was brought, you know, as an ornamental, you know, as Europeans moved to the Americas, they brought many, many different of their favorite plants, and this was one of them. And so you see this plant often around some of the historical mining towns, especially around old historic buildings. But the problem is that this plant doesn't play well with others, you know, where we often like to, you know, have if we plant something, we like to, you know, sometimes bit contained, but this plant does not do that. It spreads very, very rapidly. And what we have found over the last, you know, 100 years since its introduction is it has become extremely widespread here in California. Problem, I mean, you play devil's advocate and say, well, it's got pretty flowers. It looks really nice. Why not, you know, why is it considered a bad thing? Well, you know, it forms these very dense monocultures, meaning it just outcompetes everything around it. So you have nothing but this plant, oblong spurge. And so any sort of pollinator plants or food for wildlife becomes almost non-existent where this plant starts growing. It basically outcompetes everything around it. And it is a member of the Euphorbia family. So it's very closely related to things like poinsettias or other spurges that you may know of in your home landscape. Very characteristic of these plants is that when you break a piece of the stem, you'll often see this like white oozing latex that comes out of the stem. This latex is extremely often an irritant to many people. So it can cause blisters or rashes. It's poisonous to animals that eat it. So it's not a good, you know, food source for our native browsers, you know, deer and all the other sorts. So that's, you know, some of the major concerns with this plant.
Oh my gosh. So has it gotten out of control in the last, how many years has it just gotten out of control? Because
it's been here for about 100 years, but I would say, you know, as we see with many weeds, it's, you know, the population doesn't just take off from the point that it gets introduced. I would say, you know, more recently in the last maybe 20 or 30 years is where I've really seen it start to become more abundant, more populations. The populations are getting larger, more dense, and it's moving out of areas that we never had seen it before. So this is a perennial plant. So it's got a very vigorous root system. So these plants will live for multiple years. And we've always kind of seen this plant grow in wetter areas. So in and along creeks and streams and along rivers. That's where we've always seen this weed become a problem. But I would say in the last, again, 15, 20 years, now we're starting to see it move. And it's becoming more apparent in drier sites. So it's coming up out of those areas into drier areas that are most commonly thought of as like the blue oak woodlands. So now we're seeing it in around growing amongst annual grasses. So now it's showing up in pastures where animals like cows and goats and sheep are browsing and can become more in contact with this plant where it can pose its poisonous effects. The other big place that we're seeing this plant explode is areas after burns. And so, of course, we all are familiar with the Butte Fire back in 2015 that just had devastating effects out of the McCallamy watershed and into Calaveras County. I'm seeing this plant just run like wildfire in that burn area. So, you know, where we would expect to hopefully see a lot of native plants coming back after the burn, in many cases I'm seeing, unfortunately, the area is becoming completely dominated by oblong spurge.
Now, when you say after the fire, so did it recede or did the roots stay alive or was it both? Yeah.
Probably. So it was already probably in that area in very small populations, like maybe a few plants. And so it was there in some of those burn areas. But I would suspect that also, you know, because it does reproduce also by seed, that these seeds are being moved probably by animals and downstream, you know, by water movement and all of that. So it's probably a combination.
Oh my gosh. So does this plant look differently as a young plant? If you see it in your yard, would you know what to look for? I mean, cause it's
pretty non-conspicuous. You know, it's got these leaves that are about 2 to 3 inches long, kind of very narrow, but so in, you know, before it's flowering, it could be very easily misidentified for so many other plants, but probably the best characteristic is that milky latex sap. So, you know, if you just break off a leaf or if you break the stem and you see the plant exude that white latex, and that is often a really good indicator that you may be looking at oblong spurge or another spurge species. I mean, there's other plants that do have that white latex, but it's a pretty good characteristic to use.
Okay. Now, one of the things, if it's like, since it's in the euphorbia family, we've had experience with some other euphorbias, not this particular one, but I've talked to master gardeners that have been pruning back their ornamental euphorbias in their garden and inadvertently got it on their hands, and then they wiped their eyes and they actually ended up in the hospital because it's such an irritant.
Yeah, exactly.
That and it's pretty dangerous. So how would you recommend handling it? Say, for instance, if you do find it in your garden, and I mean, everybody should get rid of it. How do you do that?
Yeah. So be super careful. Like you said, I've seen so many cases over the years of people inadvertently not knowing that it was there and doing like weed whacking work. Yeah. And, you know, weed whackers going through a population, you know, through a patch of this stuff, you can only imagine all of that plant debris getting shot into your eyes and onto your skin. And so that's another case where you have to be super careful. So if you know you have this plant, I would say hand pulling can be effective. It has, again, a very vigorous root system. And so unfortunately, just hand pulling, and if it breaks off at the root, often those roots will re-sprout. So that makes it very difficult. You know, you have to be very vigilant about coming back and continuing to re-pull. But wearing gloves, wearing long sleeves, you know, basically covering up all of your skin is super important. Wearing eye protection is also extremely important. You know, just bagging up that material and just being cautious, and then making sure to wash up really well. So yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, it is so, it's such an irritant. So you have to be super careful with when you're around it.
What about, and I hate to say this, but again, going back to maybe if you have a little bit of acreage and you just are thinking, there is no way I can pull all this stuff out.
Yeah.
Then what do you do?
Well, you know, luckily, there may be some help for you. Depending on where you're at in what county you might may be listening to, you know, check with your county agricultural department. In Amador County, for example, right now, they applied for some funding through the Department of Food and Ag last year to start a countywide, I'm going to call it an eradication program, but it's a control program for oblong spurge. And so it was supposed to start this year in 2020, but because of COVID, it was tough to get this project up off the ground. But starting next year, the County Agricultural Department will be going out and trying to control oblong spurge on private property. So if you live in Amador County and you have oblong spurge, contact your County Ag Department. They have been mapping it over the last year, so they have a good idea where it's at, but I'm sure there's still populations out there that they don't know about. For people that do have it on their property that they have mapped, they're going to be sending out a flyer in the coming weeks to let those landowners know about the program, and hopefully they can get permission to go on those properties to help try to minimize the spread of this plant. For the other counties, I know it's, you know, like I said, it's starting to really take hold in Calaveras County. I would still contact your county ag departments, let them know that you're concerned about this weed, see if there's any help that they might be able to provide. Also, the county resource conservation districts might also be a source of assistance as well.
Maybe you happen to be in a county that just doesn't have any type of funding available.
Yeah.
Then what do you do?
Yeah. So, so contact our office, our UC Cooperative Extension office and the Master Gardener Programs plant. And we have some other recommendations as well for how individual landowners can effectively treat oblong spurge. So even if those resources that I mentioned aren't out there, contact our office. We can at least outline some of those different treatment options that might be effective.
You know what, Scott? You've got your field guide. It's a weed field guide available free to the public. They can download it, and they can download it on our UCCE Central Sierra website. What I really like is, of course, you're using the integrated pest management approaches where you're starting with the least amount and then working your way up to if you have to use some type of herbicide. That is really, everybody, I think, is a must have.
Definitely go to visit our website, pull up that publication. Like I said, you can pull it up as a download on your smart device, on your phone or an iPad or computer, Or if you want a hard copy, they are free from our office. So you can contact our office and we can get you a hard copy as well.
Well, Scott, I hate to say it, we ran out of time, but thank you so much. And if I do happen to see it in my yard, I'm going to take all the precautions, but I'm going to be diligent and pull it out. So thank you so much and goodbye.
This is KAADLP 103.5 FM, Sonora, California.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I am at the Sonora office talking to Lisa Page, who is the president of the Master Gardeners and also does so much work with the demonstration garden and is in charge of the demonstration garden. So, hello, Lisa.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Oh, good. One of the things we're going to talk about today is about seeds.
Seed catalog.
Seed catalogs. Yes. So it's.
I've been using seed catalogs. When I moved up to Sonora in 1990, in September of 1990, and I started my first garden at home in 1991. And back then it was Burpee catalogs and Michigan Bulb Company and Johnny Seeds. They were all East Coast seed companies. There wasn't a lot of heirlooms in the catalogs back in the early 90s. I think I must have seen it in the back of a Mother Earth news magazine for a company called Territorial Seed Company. And they're in a place called the Willamette Valley in Oregon. And I thought, you know, I'd be really nice to get seeds from somebody on this coast because it made more sense to me.
Sure.
You know, because I have no idea what the growing conditions are on the East Coast, but I'm sure it's nothing like what we've got going on over here as far as all, you know, take
your
pick.
I'm pretty sure it's different just watching the weather reports.
Right,
it seems like it's...
I don't know how they get to grow anything, honestly, but that's
I know.
Story. So I started with those seed companies, and back then it was just catalogs. There wasn't online seed. There wasn't a whole lot of online anything at that point, if I recall.
You know what? You're right. Everything was catalogs.
So I called him up and I had him send me a catalog, and I think that's what introduced me first to the heirloom tomatoes that I grow today was through that company. There was also a second company at the time that was in that same valley called Nichols Garden Seed Company. They don't put out a catalog anymore, actually. They were a bit smaller than Territorial. So I just, at the time, just started ordering from Territorial. They had, it was exciting. I got to try varieties of tomatoes I'd never heard of or seen, you know. Some of them brought back memories of my childhood of what must have been probably heirlooms at the time.
Sure.
You know, the big pink beefsteaks must have been something like a Brandywine or something like that. But so it started with that, and fast forward to today, I mean, well, I'd say, I don't know when they started. Everybody started moving their catalogs to online. It must have been in the 2000s, I'm guessing. Mid-2000s.
Yeah, something like that.
Territorial, the bonus about their catalogs is they've always got great cultural information about when to start your seeds, you know, the cultural practices, you know, how many weeks to start inside, you know, prior to planting out, when to harvest. And I thought, you know, there's a wealth of knowledge just in their catalogs.
Oh, it sure sounds like
it. So I've probably got some sitting stashed at home from back then, who knows. I always... So they started sending me one for spring and one for fall.
Mm-hmm. That makes
sense.
And
Nichols, too. There were other companies that I, once again, I'm pretty sure I found in the back of either Mother Earth News or Organic Gardening Magazine. Another one was Abundant Life. It was I think they're still around. They have a lot of herb seeds and medicinal herb seeds.
Okay.
At the time, not being a master gardener, being new to gardening in the foothills. And I ordered something like, for instance, tansy.
Okay.
Bad idea.
Uh-oh.
It actually still grows today in my yard I planted it back then. It reseeds so readily. And if you've ever grown something like feverfew is another one, it can be really invasive.
Yeah. It's pretty.
It's pretty. So is the tansy. Fortunately,
yeah, tansy's pretty.
I grew the tansy because it was supposed to help repel ants from fruit trees.
Oh.
So my little go at growing fruit trees, I had planted it in a spot where I had planted a fruit tree. Well, it got taller than the fruit tree.
Ah.
Fruit tree died, but the tansy's still there. So I am assuming it probably works for ants. I don't know. I never really got to experience that part. But things like valerian and hyssop.
Okay.
I got seeds way back then from them. Their mission is to, every seed packet you bought, they used to donate seeds to poorer countries. So I think they still put out, it was just a paper catalog with hand-drawn pictures. Right. And
how about the cost? Was it a lot more expensive to order from the seed catalogs?
Well, when you get a little carried away, it's the price has gone up significantly now compared to back then. I mean, I think back then you would get a packet of seeds for maybe a dollar or something. I think the highest amount you might have paid was $2 for, depending on what kind of seed it was.
Okay.
How many seeds you would get, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing good about it. It'll tell you the weight, but it'll also tell you, like in territorial, it'll say a quarter gram has approximately, you know, 100 seeds if it's tomatoes or something like that. And you could also, if you were, I think it was set up too, if you were a small farmer, that you could order like a quarter pound or oh goodness, I can't even imagine ordering a quarter pound of tomato seeds of any variety. But even with territorial, I've watched them evolve mm-hmm. into more heirlooms. And I wasn't introduced to, there's a wonderful catalog put out by Baker's Creek. If you go online, you look up rareseeds.com. And all they sell is heirlooms. Oh. And I must have been introduced to that when mm-hmm. I worked the first seed share.
Okay.
I think back in 2009, my first year as a master gardener.
Quite a while ago.
Talk about heirlooms. There was things I'd never seen before, and the pictures are just absolutely gorgeous.
So it's inspiring.
It's very inspiring.
You want to grow all those things.
Now, mind you, I love their catalog and their pictures and all the different varieties, but I find it a little lacking in the cultural information.
Okay.
And whereas with every territorial tomato listed, they'll put open pollinated or hybrid or whatever, and days to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in some of the listings in the Baker's Creek catalog, they seem to not put that. So if you're new to gardening, my suggestion would be to get a territorial seed company catalog to use as your guide.
Okay.
For planting. It's an easy, quick reference. You can carry it out in the garden with you. I mean,
Are you getting ready to order seeds?
Probably more towards the end of the month. They come pretty quick when you order from, especially when you order from this coast.
Okay.
Now, honestly, Baker's Creek has a location in Petaluma, but they're centered in Missouri. I actually called one time and I had actually talked to one of the farmers. It was quite interesting.
I bet.
I don't do that part, but you know, email so and so and. Then when you go online now, it opens up the thing so much wider. It's with all the catalogs that I find nowadays, because I used to be inundated this time of year with Christmas catalogs, you know,
from
every kind of company.
Yeah.
That's slimmed down over the years, thank goodness. But, you know, I know there's many more. I know that Seed Savers Exchange is another catalog that I have not actually. I should probably try to get one of those. But there's Johnny Seeds now. They're still on the East Coast, I believe.
Okay, but primarily you order all your heirloom tomato seeds
between Territorial and Baker's
Creek. How about maybe if you're planting squash, where do you order squash?
Same thing. You know, usually most squash comes in a hybrid form.
Okay.
I've found there are some open pollinated, listed in Territorial. Whereas Baker's Creek tends to have what you would find more hybrid. Your old yellow crooknecks is a mm-hmm. heirloom. But when it comes to zucchinis and maybe a gold zucchini or found a almost white zucchini, they called it.
Wow.
It was a pale yellow called cube of butter. It was,
ooh,
yeah.
That sounds really.
And every patty pan color squash you can imagine was in Baker's Creek, but you can only plant so much when you have limited space.
Right, right.
Mind you, I try to fit as much as possible in. And how much squash can a family of three eat, honestly?
Well,
you
so
can donate. You can
eat quite a bit if you just...
you get creative, yeah. Find every squash recipe possible.
Right.
But that's when you can donate to your local food banks and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is always a great thing to do.
So I went ahead and I saw a book called... I think it's put out by Seed Savers Exchange, actually, It's a seed saver book to teach you how to save your own seeds from just about anything. And so I probably should one of these days try to check out the Seed Savers catalog. But Focus orders their seeds from Seed Savers because they can get them in large bulk to package them up to have available to the public during the seed share, which happens every February, third week in February. So look out for that. That's a good place.
I also
started picking up seeds there.
Okay.
Because $1 for a pack of seeds, you know, it may not be as full as a, you know, some of the heirlooms that nowadays are up to $4 a pack.
Oh, really?
I bought my son some, he got really interested in really hot chili peppers. And he was watching me on the computer looking at the Baker's Creek catalog. And he's going, I want to try that pepper. I think it was $3-$4 for like 10 seeds.
Wow.
So you're like, I don't want to mess this up.
Right, right.
But the idea with that is if it's open pollinated, which I'd say 98% of the things in there are more than 98% are all heirloom, which means they're open pollinated, which means you can save the seeds and then you can grow your own from your own seeds.
Okay.
And when you do that, each year that you save seeds from, let's say, a tomato, like Cherokee Purples, I've been doing that for many years. That's a tomato that I love.
And you save those seeds?
Yeah, I've been saving those since the mid-90s, I'd say.
Oh my gosh.
And each year that you save them from that year's tomato, it becomes more acclimatized to your particular microclimate.
Oh.
So I found that really interesting.
And
I thought that would be totally cool to do.
Yeah.
My hard part is when I start looking at the seed catalogs is that every year I'll see it, I want to try a different kind of tomato.
Oh.
Or I want to try a different kind of squash.
And there's always new varieties?
Uh-huh.
Every year?
Well, a lot of times. One year I was, Baker's Creek had a white tomato. Gotta grow this.
This is just too cool.
I gotta grow this. It was, some heirlooms are extremely difficult. They're very picky. Heirlooms can be, if your soil isn't perfect, which I really truly don't think that that's possible, but some people are able to get closer, and at times we're all able to get closer, then they can be more susceptible to diseases and attacks from other things. So I managed to get a couple of tomatoes out of it, and they were delicious.
Wow.
I saved the seeds from it, but I didn't have that many. So the next year, they didn't have that particular same white tomato, but they had other ones.
Oh.
They have green tomatoes. I tried that. And, you know, multicolored stripes.
That sounds like exciting. So much fun. That is exciting.
And then another way that I started saving seeds was going to the local farmers' markets and talking to the farmers. Is this an heirloom? And they'd say yes. And I'd say, okay, so it's open pollinated. And they're like, yeah, so I could save seeds from those. And I came across one years ago called a yellow Belgian, which is absolutely delicious.
Sounds wonderful. You're not going to believe it, Lisa.
Oh, we're out of time. I could talk about seeds forever.
I know, you could. So it will be fun to look forward to seed catalogs and see what's new for the coming season and possibly order some seeds. So Lisa, thank you for all the great information.
Thank you, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.